Welcome to the Poet Runner Podcast, where I talk about poetry and running. And Richard Modiano is running a little late, so we'll wait for him to call in, and then Doug Knott shall be calling in. And we'll be talking about Doug Knott's history in poetry. He's had a long history with Lost Oak Club, Karma Bums, Lost Tribe. He's gone into storytelling now. He's transitioned his write poetry into writing short stories and performing them. And, you know, since I am waiting, I might as well knock off the review of things that I am taking for my runs. Currently, I'm using Insane Labs Psychotic when I first started working out in the morning to train. Then during the workout, I take Bolt by 6 a.m. run. Also, if you mention Poet and the code Poet to get supplements from 6 a.m. run, you know, to give you a discount, 20% discount. And I'm also taking the Insane Labs Way, the Insane Labs 28 Days Letters for Recovery, and their CMA. And those are the things I am taking to be healthy. And let us see. And we have Doug Knott. Hey, Doug. Looks like Richard, the technical thing's not going to work, so how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I just mentioned that you're transitioning from, you know, being a Karma Bum to Lost Tribe to the Lost, from the Lost Club to everything that you've done. You're transitioning from poetry to, you know, storytelling and performance and more stuff like that.
Well, put it this way, I'm doing some storytelling, but it's really, I don't ever change from being a poet. I've even taken a humor writing Zoom course with joke writing, which I'm not very good at, but basically I come back to being a poet. Can't escape it.
Yeah, once you, I don't know, that's definitely, with everything I do, I'm always, that's always going to be my first thing. I definitely want to try short stories and stuff, you know, and,
yeah,
and, you know, branch out.
Okay.
And
that's right.
You've been at this, I mean, let's talk a little bit about your history. First, you managed to Lost the Club for a long time, didn't you?
No, what I did is I had a show every 2 weeks at the Lost the Club, which was
okay.
A fairly major L.A. art club. And then I did about 2 or 3 years of shows there. And I emceed the show, and I had a lot of local rock and roll people on the show.
And then when did the Karma Bums Lost Tribe stuff start? Like what year?
We started at the same time, about 1985. And we did, the Lost Tribe, which was 4 of us, we did at least 200 shows. That is of our stuff. And we did little dramatic routines, too, that SA directed. We had, we did ZZ Top with Long Beards. We did a football game with throwing the football. We did things where we had fire on stage. We did things
cool.
We set off fake bombs, but it was a sort of a performance art show.
Cool. And, Todd, how long have you been writing poetry? How long have you been working at it?
Well, I've been working at it, really. I didn't work at it before because I started out writing songs in the early 80s because I had a band of all things. I play, but I play pretty badly, Raphael. You wouldn't want to hear me. But I was the front of the band. So I got into poetry from more of a performance angle than a literary angle. But I had studied poetry in college, of course. And I'd written some poetry. But I really started in the mid-80s.
I remember some of the shows, a lot of the shows. I remember a lot of the road trips. I remember New Mexico. I remember going to San Francisco with you guys. I remember all those people.
You were on?
I remember.
You were on the shows as our mascot.
Yep. It was fun. It was definitely different. You know, it was definitely an experience. I just remember enjoying.
How was the experience for you? Was it
good
for you?
It was kind of it was good. It was a learning thing, you know. Different, you know, it was a growing thing in art. For me, it was like you know, seeing how far I could go with the poetry, how far, you know, it could take me. And I don't know, I enjoyed the road trips. They're good memories. You know, it's definitely, you know,
sure.
Reading to a different town is a lot, you know, it's a little bit past your safety zone, because when you're reading where you're born, you know, where you're born and raised, that's easy. But when you go somewhere out of your comfort level, it's different.
Yeah, but we also had a lot of fun on the trips, goofing around.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember. I remember a lot of it. A lot of it's a little hazy, but that's just me. But when did you start doing the storytelling? I mean, when did that really become something for you?
Well, the storytelling is not yet a big thing for me, because it's a different venue. It's a different effort. Storytelling is not really an art trip. It's more of a pop explanation trip. So when it's a performance, so I've only done it a couple of times and recently, and I enjoy it, but I don't enjoy it as much as a poetry reading, because it's not artistic. It's a blah, blah, blah.
Hmm.
And the audience is different.
I never thought about it that way. So the crowds are different. You get a different crowd, a different mind.
Oh,
there's people watching
different.
You.
They're completely different.
Well, what's the,
all they want to do
what's
is
the difference?
Change. Well, in a poetry reading, half of the audience are poets that want to read on the same show. So
okay. That
doesn't happen in storytelling. Storytelling is people that want to be entertained, and usually they have some connection with the storyteller. But it's just a different thing. It means that you often don't do it without notes. Just tell the story. And it's usually some kind of cute thing that happened to you.
Hmm. What are you like? I remember key events with you. I remember your book being published by Seven Wolves Press. I remember Michael Blake mentioning you at the Oscars. I remember a lot of things that, you know, happened around you when I was around you. I remember those moments.
Well, I'll tell you about Michael Blake mentioning me at the Oscars. Because my friend Michael Blake wrote Dances with Wolves, but he was broke. He used to live in his car. He lived in a 1975 Chrysler called Das Boot, and he slept in the back seat. And he'd come to my place and take a shower before he wrote Dances with Wolves. And he sold, because of Kevin Costner, he sold 3.3 million copies of the book after the movie came out. So he got made in the shade.
I remember when I interviewed him, like, after a couple of years after Dances with Wolves, he told me the problem with the business now was that they only wanted books about Kardashians, and they weren't interested about literature anymore or anything well-written.
Well, it varies. For example, I just saw where our friend Viggo Mortensen is in a movie by David Cronenberg called Crimes of the Future. And I'm looking at that one's going to be smart. I'm going to look forward to that.
Yeah, I just stumbled onto that preview. But I think Viggo's been getting a lot of – I'm acquainted with Viggo. We're not close friends. I've just met him once or twice, clarifying, because people always say they're somebody's friends and they're not. They just – you know. But the thing is, I saw the preview. It looks good. I mean, I like them in the History of Violence. But Viggo's always been a close supporter of poetry. I know that.
He's a poet. He's a writer himself.
And an artist, and he has a book company. And remember, he published a couple of Scott Weinberg's books, our friend Scott.
He's published about 40 books at least.
Yeah. But I remember what he did for Scott. I remember all the good things he did for Scott. He was very, very kind and very good to Scott. And I always remember that.
Viggo's a terrific guy. He's a friend of the arts.
No, you got to appreciate that, because it's kind of like, you know, some artists and actors get to the point where they're above everything and they forget everybody else.
Viggo's not like that. He never was.
No, that's the good thing about him, you know. I mean, he was very supportive of Henry, you know, when Henry started writing poetry. I know that.
Right. Well, Henry's running the company now.
Well, yeah, which is very cool, you know, and it's like, you got to appreciate people like Viggo. because, you know, he's honest, true artist. He's an honest, true artist. He's not, you know, he's not full of it and, you know, gets lost in it. He's actually just, you know, I think he does, he paints, he writes poetry. I think he does art for art's sake, not because he wants to be popular or famous.
Oh, yeah. No, he doesn't need it. I went once to a reading to support him. I went once to a reading to support Vigo. I thought he needed it. When I got there, there were 400 people just waiting, looking at him. I was sitting in the first row. So I felt all the eye pressure
behind me.
Looked around, and they're all looking at me. But they weren't looking at me. They were looking right through me at Vigo and Dennis Hopper on stage.
Yeah, I mean, I read only once with him, and it was like years. I mean, 30 to 5 years ago once. I think you were there. I think a bunch of us were there. At some iffy open restaurant in Fairfax. It was a long time ago.
He used to read The Iguana.
Yep, I remember those days too. I mean, there's so many venues that have come and gone that we both went to. They were both part of, and you know, there's a lot of things that have come and gone. Some things I miss, some things I can do without. I remember there was Electronic Cafe we used to go to.
Sure.
You know, and there's also, I mean, between me and you, I mean, I remember you had a reading series for me at Sam's Book City. I forgot the name of it. But I remember.
The reading series. That's right. I did.
Yeah.
In the 90s.
Yeah, I remember you also had. Yep, yep. We're old. Damn, we're old. You know, poetry's come and gone, changing, it keeps changing. And I don't know how I feel about a lot of poetry, but I want to support it, you know?
Well, everybody's got some. We always figure everybody's got one good poem.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, but the scary part is when you get on stage and they say this is going to be my best poem, and it never is. You know, never is. As soon as they say it's their best poem, it's like, that's your opinion, but it's not true. You know, glad you think it is, but no.
All depends on what on stage itself is a little bit not poetical. It's more showbiz.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of things that that are good and bad about the poetry in LA, and there's like everything else, you know. There's a lot of, I mean, you were never full of it. You were never like a big ego. You know, that's what I like about you. I mean, you're very supportive and, you know, you're very good to your friends.
Well, thank you very much.
No, you know, there's a lot of fair weather friends in poetry that I've had, you know, a lot of people that are my friend because I can book them readings or I can introduce them to people. And, you know, once you figure out what they are and who they are, then you deal with it, but the ones that really are your friends are the ones that have been around you for like the 30 to 40 years. You know, the ones that you keep calling and talking to. And the ones where you share the poetry, don't share with anybody else because this is stuff that you don't know if you're sure about. And it's easier to share with somebody that you trust, you know? I mean,
you bet.
I always dig hearing a new piece from you. I always like the way you write and the way you perform it. I mean, you definitely got your own style. I mean, no one has your style. Nobody can read your poem like the way you read them. I don't know, but when it has energy, it's got great energy. But then when you're low key, it's low key. But usually have high energy. I remember the Cahuenga Pass poem. I remember a lot of poems. The Port Pekoski poem, you put a lot of energy into that one. And it's just, you feel the poem when you read it, when you say it out loud. As I said before on the show, I've had a lot of poets who, I've actually booked a lot of poets who can't read their own work. And a lot of famous poets I've seen on stage at Beyond Baroque who can't read their own work. I mean, their work's great on paper, but when they do it out loud, it just kind of, wow, we wrote that? You know, something like that.
About different art forms, but performance is a different art form than writing. So it requires a different bunch of reflexes.
No, I definitely agree. You know, it's definitely a different reflex. You know, it's, you know.
Well, you got to enjoy it.
You definitely.
For one thing.
Oh, yeah. No, I've always enjoyed it.
Really?
I remember when I first met you and Essay back at the Onyx, I think it was like 1988 or 89. I remember.
Yep.
I remember how much I dug the energy you guys were giving off, and I always dug watching you and Scott and Essay perform together.
Well, we had a performance group. We were called the Karma Bums.
Yep.
And we did a five-man show with one big guy in the center. So the rest of us little guys moved around, but our main guy weighed more than 400 pounds. So he anchored it, really, literally.
No, I know he did. I mean, Scott's one of the few people I miss in this world. You know,
I miss him too.
I mean, he was full of energy. He was never mean. He hardly ever got upset, even though people did push him a little bit. You know, and he's always, you know, he was very good about telling you about new poets and about what he liked, and he was very great going down to Dutton's to go visit him, you know.
Yeah. Well, Scott was a particular guy. He was a channel, I thought. You might call him a little bit of a genius, and it's too bad
yeah.
we lost him.
Yeah. I'm just glad Vigo published the books that he did for him, you know. Those were really nice books. I like the fact that Vigo, when he produces books, you know, did it with a lot of care. You know, he didn't just brush them out.
Oh, gold was artistic.
Yeah. You know, a lot of publishers don't have that in mind. It's marketing, promoting. It's more worried about how much money they can make. I don't think
well,
people worry about that one.
Let me ask you a question. Who expects to make money on poetry?
You know, some people actually think they're going to be famous at this shit. I mean, they work at it hard. They push it. They book a bunch of readings thinking that they're going to be some kind of pop star. I've never done it for that reason. I just do it because I like, you know, writing and seeing how people react to my work. It's a little narcissistic, I admit, but man, poets are a little bit narcissistic. You got to at least accept that about yourself.
I bet you bet. Otherwise, why write?
Yeah, you know.
Walt Whitman said he was glorifying himself.
Yep. Oh yeah, no, he did. And what I dig about you is that you read other poets and you have knowledge of other poets and you know a bunch about their poetry and other, you know, other styles. You've actually spent time, you know, it's not like somebody who just got locked into Bukowski a lot, like a lot of poets do, because Bukowski's easy accessible. No, mind you, he's really good to read. But there's other poetry other than Bukowski.
Well, sure. Well, our crowd likes Bukowski because he's L.A.
Yep. But then you got Neruda, you got Ruben Dario, you got a bunch of stuff out there that, you know,
Raphael.
You need to tap into. Yep.
Raphael, I'm calling your attention.
Can you hear me?
There's one poem that I want to read, the one I wrote for you
about
running.
Cool. All righty.
So let me, I usually write beat style, kind of narrative poetry, but this is a different type of, written for the back of a T-shirt. So it's just it's a few stanzas and it's rhyming couplets. And it's a poem I wrote for you, Raphael, that went on the back of a T-shirt when I sponsored you for that race. So I'll read the poem now. It's about running in a marathon. So the title of the poem is Run Alone with Many. I built my legs to climb the air. Wind dries my sweat, fans through my hair. The pace enchants me straight ahead. My body bursts, extends my tread. Command those legs to never stop, 'cause my ferocious inner cop, will-powered legs and lungs on, will roll me like a tire. The flame of oxygen I need, such magic gas and heights of speed. Finish lines I'll greet and pass. I'll run right through the hourglass. Each day I run alone, sublime. The big reward, beat my own time.
That's usually what you're trying to do, beat your own time.
Well, that's my favorite line poem, except my favorite line says, "My ferocious inner cop," because you need a lot of willpower to keep on going. But beating your own time, because if you're a marathon runner, all you've got is that, because you're in the middle. You're not going to win unless you are that unusual faith being that can win a marathon. So
yeah, that's nuts.
Really about yourself.
I love the fact when people ask me, do you think you're going to win? I'm like, there's about 10,000 other people running with me. I'm pretty sure I'm not going to win. I'm going to finish, and I don't know what it's going to be like when, you know, the numbers come up, but pretty sure I'm not going to win because I can't run the marathon in 2 hours.
That's the most incredible statistic. It means people that run a marathon, that win it, they run an average of more than 11 miles an hour. It's almost unbelievable to think about that for 26 miles.
It takes me, how long does it take me to run a mile? About 10 minutes.
Okay.
9 to 10 minutes. I mean, I'm not that fast when it comes to miles. But no, I mean, it's definitely, if you're doing it, you got to love it. If you don't love it, then it's painful. You know, it's the same thing about writing. If you force it, it's not fun. And I think the reason the writing works for both of us is because we enjoy it. You know, we enjoy the process. We enjoy what we come up with. We enjoy, like, the finished product. You know, we enjoy what we actually created. You know, I mean, I loved your book, you know, Small Dogs Bark Cartoons. I love the cover. That was a great cover.
Thanks.
I love the way it was produced. No, it covers everything. I mean, you know that. The cover is the first thing that people see when they're looking at your book. Cover is what gets people to open up the book.
You sound
they don't like the cover. I'm talking
you
marketing.
Sound super.
I'm talking the marketing aspect of poetry. but it's true. It's very superficial, but that's what people see. Most people are superficial. I mean, I don't want to be insulting to people, but, you know, most people, if they don't go see a movie because they like the movie, they go see a movie because 1,000 other people said it was cool. You know, and that's why we have blurbs in the back of the books for, you know, other writers to say that our work is good. You know, people want validation. They want, like, someone to say it's good before they read it, which kind of funny to me because I'll read anything just to see if it's good, make up my own mind. But
sure.
You know, I mean, what is your favorite reading you've done, you know, in your life? I mean, one memorable one that you really enjoyed.
Well, I've read a million things. I'll tell you one thing I read recently that was a challenge. It was a poet called Hart Crane. And a guy asked me to do a blog show reading Hart Crane, so I had to get into Hart Crane. He was a famous poet from the 20s, the 30s.
Yeah.
So I got Hart Crane, and he was a very famous poet. And he wrote kind of against T.S. Eliot. T.S. Eliot wrote The Wasteland about how everything was dead. And this is the beginning of modernism, like about 1920. So Hart Crane came in and he wrote something about America that was really strong. He wrote a poem called The Bridge. And I read sections on the blog show called The River and Cutty Sark. He did jazz rhythms inside the line. It was a very tricky thing to read. But I loved it. I got a lot out of it, but I had to work hard. Usually I don't like to work hard when I read, but this one I did and it was paid off.
That was Harry's show, right?
It was Harry Northup's show.
Yeah, Harry's another great poet, another good friend. But yeah, no, I'm glad he's doing a podcast. I've seen it. I've seen some of the shows. I think I saw part of the one you're in. I didn't get to finish it, but I'm glad Harry's still out there doing stuff.
He does. It's a little TV show.
No, it's cool. I'm glad he still does stuff. I'm glad he's still out there. No, it's very cool. So when's your next performance?
I don't have one scheduled. It'll have to be one. You'll have to pick one up there, Raphael. I don't have one scheduled.
Wow,
no, I like
really?
To do them. Well, I do one about every couple of months. like I enjoyed doing your show, the one we did up there in Highland Park.
Yeah, that was fun. I mean, I enjoyed seeing you because I hadn't seen you for a while. You know, it's
yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of funny. I mean, I don't know how you feel about it because, I mean, we both – I mean, you've been at poetry longer than I have, but it's kind of like, you know, watching all the new poets come up, and it's just remembering how you were when you were coming up and how different it is coming up now than it is then, you know.
I couldn't even hardly imagine how it is now because of all the internet and the influencers and the whole hustle online.
And the political correctness, half the drunk stuff I pulled when I was first coming up, I probably would have been canceled the way I used to be. I'm pretty sure I would have been canceled. You know, these days I would be. But, let's see.
You could.
All right.
Like me, too.
Yeah, I think we'd both be canceled. We're not politically correct, you know? Unfortunately. But it looks like my next guest is coming on, and it's been great talking to you, and I look forward for your new stuff that's coming. It'll be coming out of you sooner or later, and your next performance.
Oh, that's great. Nah, this is fun, Raphael. Keep it up.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
And our next guest is Michael Bellini. Hello?
Hey there. Can you hear me okay?
Howdy. Did I say your name right?
Bellini, yes. That's correct.
Wow. You're the first name I've gotten right in the last – I mean, the first runner's name I've gotten right in the last 3 days. No, I've had some really – one was easy. One was Canary, and I said Carney instead, which I don't know where I got Carney from, but that was a mistake. That's kind of like – so how are you? And
I'm good, man.
I might as well start. What are you training for right now?
I am training for a race. It's actually a week from Saturday, and it's called Mid-State Mile. It's here in just south of Nashville, Tennessee. That's where I live. And it's interesting. It's actually the only ultra marathon I've ever run. It's the only race longer than a 5K I've ever run, actually. So we can get into that. I've really only been running for a couple of years, but it's interesting. It's a last man standing event where they have a 1.1 mile loop that goes through the woods. It has about 340 feet of elevation gain and loss with every loop. So it's that elevation and the downhill that really gets you. And you have, the way it's set up is you have 20 minutes to run the loop. And if you finish it in 20 minutes, then you get to go again. And you just keep going until there's one person left. I've been essentially the last couple months, the majority of what I've been doing is running and hiking hills just to get my legs trained for that.
Wow. That's different. I hadn't heard of something like that. Somebody told me about I think he was talking about a relay on a 100-mile run, which kind of cool. But you know, I'm training for a 31-mile run coming up in August. But I call that a
where's that at?
Bulldog. It's somewhere out in California. I think in the Santa Monica Hills. It'll be my first actual ultra, but I call it a baby ultra because it's only like, you know, an extra, you know, 5 miles, you know.
You know,
it's not
though,
50 miles.
Those are the for the people that are used to running half marathons and even marathons,
yeah.
I would say this, what I've heard, I haven't necessarily done this, but what I've heard is that for people that have run 31 milers and 50 milers,
mm-hmm.
the difference
yeah.
between 31 and 50 is huge. It's that extra 19 miles after you get the 31 that really, really tests you. So, and you run a lot. So when you run marathons, 31 should be a piece of cake for you.
That's what people keep telling me because, I mean, I don't know. I'm used to running 10 miles a day, but that's just me. But they're saying because I can run 10 miles a day, I should be able to do the 31 easy.
I will say, I think so. In my experience, what I like about ultras, I have no interest in running a half marathon or a marathon. Honestly, I'm 50 years old. I just started running 2 years ago. I hated it. Hated it before that. But the thing that intrigues me are the ultras that really test how far you can go. Like I said, I don't really have much interest in just going out and running 13.1 miles or 26.2. But if you challenge me with, hey, how far can you go? Could you go 20, 30, 50, 60, 100? That's what interests me. That's what intrigues me. And it's a mind game, man. It becomes less physical and more mental, particularly based on the weather and the terrain.
I definitely agree. It's I actually like running trails more than I like running in the city.
Mm.
I'd rather run a marathon
on
trails. I don't know what it is, but the thing that annoys me about the city is it's just distractions, people. You know, it's like when I did the LA Marathon this year, people were stopping to take pictures of themselves with the Oscar signs and the Oscar statues. They're like, you're running a marathon. What the hell's wrong with you?
They're more. It sounds like they're more out for the sightseeing than the actual running.
Well, yeah, it's kind of like I'm focused on the run, and I'm looking at these people stopping to take pictures. I mean, I understand when you see somebody you love and you hug them for a second and keep running. Mm-hmm. That's different to me. That's somebody that's supporting you, and you want to show them your appreciation. You don't care if you stop or you lose time because that's somebody you care about. But a picture, it's going to kill your time. That makes no sense to me.
No, I agree. Doesn't sound like a serious runner. When you're running 31, 50 miles or longer, you've got to be focused on where you're at and not distracted by your surroundings. Because it becomes that mental game.
So what's the most miles you've ran?
I ran, it's the same course that I'm running next Saturday. I did it for 24 hours last December, and I went 62 miles. And to give you a perspective of the course, too, it's, like I mentioned earlier, the race I'm running next Saturday, they give you 20 minutes to run the 1.1-mile loop, which, if you think about it, 20 minutes to run a little over a mile sounds pretty darn easy. Sounds like you could do that all day. But because of the elevation, it literally takes about 18 minutes on average to run the loop on fresh legs. Because most people walk the uphills, run the flats, and kind of control themselves in the downhill. So, I went 62 miles in December.
Wow. But did you have a break or did you run it straight through?
I was able to take breaks every mile. And so I would essentially, what I would do is I'd run the loop. I would come into my aid station. I would grab some water. I would grab a bite to eat, and then I would head back out. So I would take, a minute break or so in between each loop. I will say throughout the 24 hours, some of the breaks got a little bit longer, but for the most part, man, it was mostly nonstop movement for 24 hours.
Yeah, that seems really intense. I had a guy who just yesterday was 158 marathons he's done, and it's like, plus he mentioned he's also done ultras. So I'm like, that's a lot. He's only doing a marathon every 3 weeks. So that's a lot on the body.
Oh man, yeah, not much time for your body to recover. That's for sure. But doing the 24 hour, the reason I did that was I wanted to see how my mind would react when my body started to quit. You know, because you're up for 24 hours straight, and
So
started at 8 a.m.
Did you get?
Yeah, it started at 8 a.m. I not bad. No, it started at 8 a.m. So I went through the night. I Actually, the nighttime was fine. 1-2 o'clock was fine. When I got to about 4 a.m. is when my body was telling me, you need some sleep. And I really had to fight to keep going because all I wanted to do was stop and sleep. So it was interesting. That's exactly what I signed up for, though. I wanted to see if I could keep going when everything inside of me said, you just want to stop. Just stop. And I wanted to see if I could get myself to keep going.
I do that a lot, too, because it's like after I run about 10, 15 miles, I'll find enough hill to go up, you know, a nice hill to see, like, can I do that hill now? It's been about 15 miles. Do I really want to do that hill? Then I do that hill, then I feel better, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a sense of accomplishment. Yeah.
Well, no, you know, the funny thing I noticed when I did a half marathon in Griffith Park over here, there's a lot of hills, and I noticed you can tell how people train by the way they run, you know, a course of hills. You can tell the people who don't normally run hills because they're walking up the hills. You can tell the people mm-hmm. who trained with hills because they're running up the hill because they're used to it.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't affect them. And that's why I always run at least two to three times a week. I find a nice big hill to run up. Like there's one big hill that's a mile straight up that I try to run at least three times a week. And I found a brand new one, which actually took me 23 minutes to run a mile because I had to climb part of the hill. I couldn't just run up, but it was a nice learning experience because. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just going to ask, when you run the hills, is that obviously it's on purpose and you're making a choice to do it? Is it to train your body to make sure that you know to kind of build your strength and make sure you don't either regress or to get better running the hills? What's the overall purpose there?
Well, there's always going to be a marathon that's going to have hills all of a sudden, so I'd rather be prepared for it than not prepared. And I've always been told that running up hills makes it easier to run flat marathons, you know, because you're – and for some reason I feel – you know, when my legs are feeling like – I feel like I got shin splints when I run up hills, it feels like it makes them feel better. But that might just be me. You know, my legs feel better when I run up hills. The downhill, I hate downhill. I'm always afraid of tripping and like falling all over my place. I haven't done it yet, but I'm always afraid, you know, it's going to be like an embarrassing accident.
Do you have a strategy going downhill?
I haven't found one yet. I just try not to fall. I want to run quicker because I see all these people passing me by, but I'm really like, I don't want to fall, you know? And the last time I tripped on pavement, I saved my phone and messed up my elbow. You know, it's like, got to save the phone.
Your elbow will heal. My priorities, your phone might not.
Yeah, my priorities are really bad because I actually fell straight on my face protecting my phone once. Like, was it really worth my face for my phone? You know, thinking probably not, but, you know.
Probably not on that one, yeah. I would have to try to protect the face, yeah.
So I can tell you enjoy running. Like, what's your favorite run? Because I got a couple favorite runs now that I've started to collect.
Ooh, I honestly can't even say that I enjoy running still. Like I mentioned,
really?
I basically. So here's, I'll tell you sort of the brief story about how I got started in it because it's pretty interesting. So, yeah, before 2 years ago, I hated running. I ran maybe a couple of 5Ks for, you know, in charity events. Other than that, I didn't run at all. I hated it with a passion. And I was one of those people that said, I will never run. I will never run a marathon. I will never do, you know, I'll never be a runner. And when everything shut down a couple of years ago, I was just looking for, and I exercise, so I keep myself in shape. I just didn't run. And when everything shut down, I basically just started doing a lot of push-ups and I started running because that was the only thing to do. And there was an ultra marathon. I'd heard of ultras through some friends. And there was one that was 30 minutes from my house. That's the one I'm doing next week, the two weekends from now. And I said to myself, you know what? If I am ever going to do one of these crazy things, this is going to be it because it's 30 minutes from my house. all you have to do is run a mile, and if you finish in the time, then you can run another mile. It's not a big deal. And I wanted to do something hard. You know, I wanted to do something really hard that pushed my mind and my body. And so I just signed up for it. I signed up my son and I on a whim. My son was 19, I think, at the time. And we were on the waiting list because the spots were already filled up. So it was almost like an out, right? I was like, well, I signed up for this thing, but I'm not really in it. I'm just at least I showed the initiative to sign up for it, but I'm probably not going to get in. Well, I woke up the morning of the race at 5:15 a.m., and I saw an email that said, hey, you're off the waiting list. You're in. Race starts at 8 o'clock. So the race was like a half an hour from my house. I had no supplies. I had no water, no food, nothing. So me and my son scrambled around. We hit the grocery store on the way out there, bought some oranges, some water, some peanut butter, some bread, apples, whatever we could grab. Headed out there, got out there about half an hour before the race started and had no idea what I was doing. I went so again, this is last man standing, so you basically just go as long as you can until you miss the cutoff. I went for about 4 hours. June, so it was like 95-degree heat, super hot. I walked away from there and I said, I am never doing something like that again, ever. Well, 6 months later, I was back doing the next race at the same course. And I've done it every year since. So what I like about it is the challenge, is to see how far I can push myself. And I will say I've gotten to a point where I like the pain. I like, because you know when you're running long distances or you're running hills consistently, I mean, you know there's going to be pain. There's going to be muscle fatigue. There's going to be cramps. If it's hot, you know, I've run in all kinds of weather. I'm like you have. When it's hot, it just sucks. When it's cold, it's just, you know, I mean, it's brutally cold. I ran every day in January this past year, the first time I've ever done that. So regardless of the weather, regardless of whether it snowed, I ran every day in January. I just like the challenge. I liked, like in January, I liked being able to say, hey, we got 4 inches of snow today, and I ran 3 miles. Last year, I ran in January or February in the snow, and I couldn't wear my sneakers because I had no traction. So I ran in hiking boots to give me traction.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's just like it's the challenge. It's the challenge of it. And there's another one, too. I wonder if you've heard of it. It's a – and this is just – it's not a race. It's just a – it's kind of like a 48-hour challenge. It's 4x4x48. And so what you do is you run 4 miles every 4 hours for 48 hours. Have you ever heard of that?
Mm-mm.
Okay. So it's a multi-layered challenge, right? You're essentially running 48 miles in 2 days because you do four miles every 4 hours for 48 hours. So it's the math adds up to 48 miles in 2 days. But the kicker is you're really only sleeping a couple hours in between having to run. So you know, I would go to bed at, like, I don't know. Actually, I think I went to bed after midnight. So I'd go to bed at midnight, get a couple hours of sleep, and then I'd have to get up at, you know, 2 a.m. to go run again and do another 4 miles. So you basically do 4 miles on the hour every 4 hours. It's that type of stuff that, that's what ignites me. You know, that's what I like about it is, can I do that? Can I actually do that? Can I actually go 48 miles in 2 days on maybe 2 hours of sleep at a time? It's that kind of stuff that I love.
Yeah, same here. Actually, for a while I was doing, I call it split sleep, because sometimes I get home at like 1 or 2 in the morning, but mostly 12 or 1. And I'd want to get up at 3 a.m. to get to the gym because I'm very weird about the gym and it has to be a way certain way with me, because past 6 o'clock, it's full of like people who text. So I want to get my gym out of the way so I can run. And I want to be there like an hour to an hour and a half. And that's all I want to be in there and get, you know, because I don't want to get too skinny. So I work out so I have some muscle.
Mm-hmm.
Because during the pandemic, I got down to 125, and that scared the shit out of me.
Holy
wasn't looking healthy.
How tall are you?
I'm 5'8".
Okay.
Mind you, I was running
really
fast. But now I maintain the weight of 140. But the thing is, I split sleep, so I'll sleep 3 hours, go to the gym, run my 10 to 15 miles, and come home and take a 4-hour nap before work. So I get my rest. But I tend to, like, you know, I like you said, I like the challenge of being, I mean, I like the miles and the distance, seeing how far I can push the distance. You know, because I don't get tired at 10 miles, and I don't get exhausted in 5 to 10 miles, you know? I mean, do you notice that?
Yeah. I'm not to that level yet. Yeah, absolutely. I'm not on that level yet to where I can run 10 to 15 miles consistently every day without getting tired. But, you know, again, starting from nothing, where 2 years ago, if you were to ask me to run a mile, I would have complained the entire time, trying, you know, running the mile, how much it hurt, how tired I was. Now, you know, for me, probably 4 or 5 miles. I don't run unless I'm running at least 4 miles. I don't have a ton of, unfortunately, I wish I had more time to train. But, yeah, just going from running 0 miles 2 years ago to, hey, if I'm going to lace up the sneakers, it's going to be at least 4 miles. That's huge. That was huge for me. Huge. It's kind of, you know, for me, I think the next level would be, going from 4 or 5 mile runs to 10 miles. But yeah, I'll go out and run 5 miles with no issue whatsoever. And I've done 10 miles. I can do 10 miles, but probably not consistently yet.
Oh, it's just a matter. I mean, I think for me, it's just the pushing part, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always pushing. I always want to do better, and I always want to get more miles.
Yep. Yeah, I totally agree. The race I did, that one I shared with you 2 years ago where I woke up and went out to the race, I did that same one the next year, and I went more than twice as far. And so that was, you know, it's that type of stuff that's so satisfying when – you know, you start from nothing and you know, you put the work in and you see the result. So, you know, I guess that's my goal this year too, is to try to go twice as far as I did last year.
No, the funny thing is, before I started working out with weights, I ran more and I ran more distance, but I think it's because I have more body weight that slows me down a little.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was running like 20 miles a day, 20 miles a day for like 5 days in a row. I actually did 20 miles for like a month straight. Now, because I'm, you know, doing the extra thing of like working out with weights, I don't just run anymore. I can't mm-hmm. my body won't do it anymore.
Do you find that do you find that working out your body, working with weights helps your running?
It builds the upper body strength, so it doesn't feel, you know, any cardio, any strength thing. I've learned to do, I do squats, but I don't do them a week or 2 weeks before a race because I don't want my legs to be, like, in pain from, like, you know, the workout on legs. But I tend to keep, you know, I tend to do squats and leg presses to build up the leg muscles because for a long time I believed that it was bad for your legs. But now I was told in certain – I've read articles that says it's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. You know, you shouldn't, mm-hmm. like, neglect it, you know, and so I don't neglect it anymore. But at the same time, I don't want to find myself a day before a marathon, you know, like my legs all fucking tired and hurt because, like, I didn't listen to my body, you know. Like, oops.
Yeah, I think you're a much more knowledgeable runner than I am. So, like I said, I've been running for 2 years, but what's your taper look like when you're coming up to the 31 miler that you're going to be doing, do you taper the last couple weeks before the race?
Yeah, I'm going to taper. My taper will be like 5 to 10 miles. I mean, I'll do a couple 10 miles, but then I'll just, as I get close, just do 5 miles.
So when you run, you'll run each day up leading up to the race?
Yep.
Okay.
I'm kind of used to that because, I mean, that's the way I've been training, but I've been told I should take at least one day off before the race to be fully fresh. So I try to do that once in a while just to relax. You know, because it's a good way to, like, you know, relax the body and to be ready.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, where I'm at, I find if I take a couple of days off from running, my legs feel super, super fresh.
But at the same time, you feel guilty for not running.
Why did I run?
And the only
trying to recover.
Exactly. And that's the key is, you know, if I take a day or two off, making sure I get right back at it without going too long. Yeah, I love doing it every day. You can feel it. You can feel the build and the muscle build. And but then if I take a day or two off and get back out there, it's like, whoa, I feel like a brand new person because I've let my body recover a little bit.
Well, yeah, no, that's important. But at the same time, I'm afraid, and I've had this fear of if you stop, you don't go back to it, or you get lazy, or you get comfortable not doing it. You know, that's my big fear.
I'm right there with you. Yep. Same with me. I have that in essentially every area of my life is when I'm afraid to get, I don't know if you call it lazy or apathetic or just disinterested. Yeah, totally, man.
Well, no, because it does happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it does happen where you get lazy. And then you don't keep it up. And then, you know, and it's like anything else, you know, it's like when you're going to school and you stop, you know, you ditch so many songs and it's a month gone by and you got to catch up, you know?
Yep.
If you played hooky so much, it's something you got to catch up. Because you didn't realize how long you were fooling around, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of like you got to make sure you don't take too many days off because then, you know, you lose whatever you have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the last thing you want to do is lose all the gains. And it's like, it's interesting because muscle mass you're not going to lose too long. And running, you probably won't go too long. But if you start missing a month, you know, you probably won't be able to run as fast as you can or you won't be able to maintain as much as you can.
No,
you might have liked when you take that month, you know.
Absolutely. I got sick a month ago, maybe a month and a half ago, where I was laid up for about 1 to 2 weeks, and I spent a few days in bed, and I didn't do anything. I had no strength to do anything for a couple of weeks, and I went out my first run. After being sick, I ran about two minutes slower per mile on my first mile than I usually do. I was amazed. Now, of course, my body was still recovering, but you can get it back pretty quick. So about 10 days later, I was running faster than I was before I got sick. So yeah, it's the struggle for me. When I take time off, the struggle is getting back at it and hitting it hard, so that I can get back to where I was. I hate that you could put all this work in for months and years, and if you take a short period of time off, man,
you lose it.
It takes you a bit. You lose it. It's frustrating, but it's true.
And you don't want to lose it, you know.
Yeah.
That's why. It's kind of funny, but I take a day off like every 2 to 6 months. I usually keep running.
If I have
a marathon or something, I recover.
Okay. Do you ever feel burnout doing it every day? And I say that as I applaud you. I mean, I love the grind. I love, you know, the consistency of doing it every day. But I'm just curious if you ever get to a point of, you know, doing it every day for 6 months, only taking 1 or 2 days off. Do you ever kind of get burnout?
No, not yet.
Okay.
I get more. I don't know. It's the thing is for me. It's very healing. You know, it kind of calms me.
Yeah.
Because the funny thing is, anger is for the gym, for lifting weights. Running's for calm and like relaxing and, you know, feeling things out. You know,
yes.
Because you can focus. You can.
Yeah.
You can just flow with the run and go. Like today, I ran down the Pacific Coast Highway. I went to Gold's Gym Venice, and then I ran, you know, by the beach. And beach runs are always great because I always feel better after them, you know. And it's
mm-hmm.
it's different from the city because it's a different mindset, you know. And it just feels better to run it that way.
Yeah, that's a great mindset. So it sounds like you run for the benefits versus, you know, for me, sometimes it's I have to run today because I've got a race coming up and I've got to build up. I don't, you know, and if I don't, then I'm not going to do as well as I can. I love that mentality of, you know, it is therapeutic. I found that when I've taken times off from running, I'm more anxious. I feel the stress more, you know. And run, you're right. I agree. And that's, you know, you asked what I love about running, and I said, well, I really don't love it, but I love what it does for me. I love that, having that sense of clarity and relieving the stress.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as I despised it my entire life before 2 years ago, I would not go back. I can't give it up because it does give me those benefits.
Yep. No, I agree. I can't. I enjoy it too much. I mean, I really enjoy doing the marathons just so I know I can finish it. It's not like, and plus get the shiny little medal.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I just enjoy the I enjoy the mentality and the way that people are in marathons, because everybody seems to be very supportive of each other. I mean, when you hit the last half marathon I ran, I think it was the great race, the swim was very supportive because I actually had a bad calf muscle. I mean, a pain in my hamstrings, and she could tell. And she's like, it's only 2 more miles. I go, those are going to be a long 2 miles. She goes, don't worry about it. It's only 2 miles. And she's got her point. It's only 2 miles, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's
nice
to have people supporting
me. I love that about races. Oh, yeah. And that's – I think you would love – the ultra marathon community as well, because it's the same thing. It's a group of people who everybody's there for the same reason. They all want to see how far they can push their body. And everybody is rooting for everybody else and so supportive. I love that about the running community.
No, so do I. I mean, I've always enjoyed, I mean, the people I've met, I've actually, I think, was it, crap, I'm forgetting names now, and people have been so helpful, you know, with getting me people on the show,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's kind of like, I hate not. Was it Laura that introduced me to you?
Laura, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. See, I love her a lot because she's really supportive, and she's given me about four guests so far that have helped me, you know, fill out the show, because I know a bunch of poet people. But running's a brand new thing that I want to push, but it's also, you know, I need to meet more people, be more part in the community, and then, you know, I like learning. You know, I learn a little
mm-hmm.
something new every time I talk to a different runner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody has a different take about why they run. You know, everybody has a different motivation. You know.
A lot of runners that I'm finding, too, and again, my only experience running really is in the ultra marathon community, but everybody's got a story, man. I mean, everybody's got a story that gives them a purpose and a reason to be there and to run.
Mm-hmm.
It's so interesting.
I have pooped in my pants running.
So
I have puked running and kept running. I have pooped in my pants running. Yeah, I kind of like, okay, I pooped. Do I want to stop running?
Mm-hmm.
Not really. And it's going to be embarrassing when I get back to the gym to take a shower. I got to figure that out when I stop, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Usually I don't stop. You know, even I one time for something I ate at work, I puked, but I still got my 10 miles done going home. But at the same time, it was painful. But I felt
finishing. Oh yeah, and everybody too. They their life has a story to tell, is what's fascinating. In that, you know, if you're wanting to connect with runners more and have more conversations with runners, man, you mentioned it earlier. You like hearing the reasons why people run. Like everybody has a different reason and different purpose.
Yep.
And that's what's fascinating about the running community, is that so true, is that everybody's got a reason to be there, and it's so unique, and so their stories, a lot of their stories are so powerful. Like go ahead.
No, it's like you're saying, on Saturday I interviewed a guy who runs Pikes Peak every year, but he does it for, you know, he isn't doing it for it's a whole thing for kids that have been hit by, you know, reckless drivers or drunk drivers, you know, it's a community of people who have lost kids, you know, doing this run to make people aware of, like, you know, kids getting killed by, you know, people, you know, drunk drivers.
Yeah.
That was their thing. And there's a whole bunch of them that do it every year.
That's so good. I'm actually going to be I'm going to be out in Pikes Peak later this month.
Wow.
Might need to do that.
Well, see, you're the second person who's doing Pikes Peak. See, it's like the more I talk to people, the more connection there is, you know, to other runners. And it's like every runner, you know, every runner has a race they like. Every runner has a race they don't like. I mean, I've been doing it long enough there's courses I'll never run again. There's parts of the city I'll never run again because I don't like them, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't like tripping. I hate the city because the sidewalks always, like, have a little bump that'll send me flying. I don't like that. I have less chance of tripping when I do trail runs. You would think that's where I would trip. But I trip more in the city than I've ever...
Man.
I've never tripped on a trail run.
I fractured my ankle last September on a trail run because I wasn't watching where I was going, and I stepped on a root, a big tree root.
Ouch.
Yeah. That was frustrating. I was actually training for a race.
Damn. Yeah, that sucks. But question, what do you do for your nutrition? What do you do to get ready for race? Because, I mean...
So that's an area of learning for me. So I'll share what I'm going to be doing in this race coming up. So this is going to be, I'm going to be burning a ton of calories. It's probably going to be 90 degrees and humid. So I'm setting up, basically going to try to get about 500 to 600 calories per hour. And I have my stomach isn't the greatest. I've had stomach issues since I was a teenager. And so I try to find things that are easy on my stomach, don't kind of weigh me down. So I've got I'll do bananas and honey. I'll do probably some avocado toast. And actually, let me caveat this, that essentially what I'm planning is to run probably for somewhere between 12 to 16 hours. And so I've got to keep myself, my nutrition up for that period of time without bogging me down too much, because I've got to maintain a certain speed. So I'll probably, you know, each hour I'll probably have a couple of bananas with honey, a piece of avocado toast. I've got these, have you ever heard of honey stingers? They're waffles with honey in the middle. They come in a package.
Yep.
So I've got honey stingers. Yep. And I'll drink Tailwind. It's if you've heard of that, it's electrolytes. It's about, I don't know, that'll give me about 100 to 150 calories per hour as well. So it's just that kind of stuff. Oranges too, just things that will help keep me hydrated, but give me calories in small amounts, in more than small amount of food. I try when I was really inexperienced, I would eat Clif bars and peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and I would go out back out onto the course and I mean, I'd just want to puke the entire time because it was too heavy on my stomach and the heat.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, I'm definitely going to have to figure that out when I do the 31 miles and when I try to, you know, reach 50 miles.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like, little by little, I think I wanted to do 50 miles by next February, but I think I'm going to push it till June or July next year because I think I need more time for my mm-hmm. body to get used to the miles. I know I can do.
Yeah, in nutrition is huge. Lack of nutrition yep. knocked me out of the race last year because my body was, I mean, my body hurt. I went for, so last June when I did this race, I went for 9 hours and my legs were, you know, they were cramping a little bit, but I was fighting through that. But man, I was a zombie after 9 hours in the heat because I didn't keep my nutrition up or my hydration. So that more than anything, yeah, it's huge.
No, you gotta maintain a balance. It's like I eat crappy at night because I work at a restaurant, so the meals aren't that nutritious sometimes. So I try to keep the meals I have before work more nutritious, and I do the protein shake because it, you know, keeps calories up. And I also do vinegar yep. shots, and then I do apple cider vinegar shots. I mean, I do ginger shots in the morning, then apple cider vinegar shots because I hear they're good for you.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. What I started doing was taking turmeric supplements.
Yeah, I do that too.
I've heard that's
that in my protein drink.
Good for your joints. I found a huge difference. My knees, and one of the reasons why I didn't like running before was because it hurt my knees. And when I started running more and then I started taking turmeric and the pain went away. My knees don't bother me at all.
Well, the funny thing is I have compression sleeves for my knees. I used to need them, but now I don't. So every once in a while I'll need them, then I don't need them, and then I need them and then I don't need them. But it's the time my knees are feeling. But right now for the last 6 months I haven't needed them, but I have them. But I only use them when I need them. Good.
Mm-hmm.
They're not necessary. Mm-hmm. They kind of, you know, they cause a little heat on your legs.
Yeah.
But we're running out of time. But also,
sure.
You got that race coming up, and mm-hmm. I'd love to have you on again. I've told most guests that I want them to come back in about 6 months to a year because a lot will change in that time. You know, different races. I tell mm-hmm. that to more. I mean, I don't want to be mean, but I tell that to people who are actually running a lot of races. You know? Because there'll be different stories, you know.
Yeah, yep.
You know,
yeah,
there'll
absolutely.
Be more stories,
I,
there'll be
yeah.
more experiences.
Yep.
And we didn't talk about the open marriage thing.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, so that's, I am on the running side. I'm definitely working my way to, I want to do a 100-miler maybe next year.
There
so
you
that's,
go.
That's on my bucket list of things to do. But yeah, as far as the ultra marriage, so essentially I combine two passions now, which is marriage, which I'll be celebrating 25 years with my wife in 3 weeks, and how marriage and kind of going the distance in marriage correlates to an ultra marathon. So I've really done a lot of reflecting on that the last couple of years. Yeah, so that's where the title
definitely
came from.
Want to have you. I want to definitely have you on the show because we haven't talked about that. I want to bring that up maybe, I don't know, maybe make it 2 to 3 months from now just so we could actually talk about 15 to a half hour about that part of it because actually that's an interesting thing. I actually respect people who have been in a marriage longer than 10 years, you know, because it's like these days it's like everybody wants the trophy wife, which is a bad idea.
Right.
My friends go, why? What's wrong with the trophy wife? Because she doesn't know you. You're giving up somebody who's known you, who knows what you like, who cares about you, who knows your pet peeves, who, you know, doesn't mind you going to the bathroom in front of you, and, you know, won't kill you if you leave your shavings on the sink. So you go for a new person who happens to be a little hot, but probably superficial and has no intelligence. You don't trade up. You kind of trade down. I mean, that's what I look 100%. That's the way I see the trophy wife. That's the way I've always looked at the
Agreed.
Trophy wife when people, you know, trade up on. It's like, you know, I mean, honestly, this is just my opinion. Clark Gable was a dick. He dumped the person who brought him up for Carole Lombard. You know,
mm-hmm.
and I maintain all these stories in my head of like how people made bad choices because suddenly they become better and they think they need something to show how much better they are. They don't stick with the person who supported them and got them to that point.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? We'll probably need to have you on the show to talk about that show because I actually agree with you on these points.
No. Sure.
Marriage.
Great.
I think,
it's been fun, man. I enjoyed. Yeah, but enjoyed talking.
No, I enjoyed talking to you.
Getting to know you a little bit.
But cool. If you're ever in LA, if you're doing an LA marathon or something, you know, email me and we could probably meet up for like a, you know, I don't know, coffee or something. I mean,
sure.
If you ever come down for a marathon in this part of the world. But yeah, Pikes Peak. I definitely want to talk about. I got two people doing Pikes Peak right now, which is cool because I definitely want to. That definitely sounds interesting. In the Pikes Peak.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Agreed.
But thank you for coming on the show. It's been great talking to you, and good luck with your next race.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you. I appreciate the time and talking with you as well. And same to you. Good luck with the 31 miler.
Yeah, it's coming. It's definitely coming.
Yeah.
But yeah, thanks. Yeah. It's been great, and hope to have you again on soon.
Okay. That sounds good,
man.
I look forward to it.
This has been the Poet Runner Podcast. It's been another show. And the next show, I do believe we have Yago Cura, and I don't have a runner for that one yet. Then I have on Wednesday, I have Edward. I can't pronounce his last name, but he's the editor-in-chief of Flower Song Press with another person I don't know. Oh, man, I'm just messing up the promos. So I'm going to let go now and say thank you for hearing this show.